Hi. Gay is not safe. And you have to come up here to Mount Rainier. Looks like the clouds are coming in a little bit. But anyway, it's a nice day up here. Pretty much blue sky all around, as you can see. Pretty nice. We circle around back this way, up the mountain. And then we get some clouds. Looks like it's moving in that direction. But anyway, you know, gay is not sin, and you shouldn't be going around condemning gay people when you don't know what you're talking about. I know a lot of you really, really, really honestly think the Bible condemns gays. And when I tell you it's a false doctrine or something, you try to tell me that I think the Bible's a lie. Come on, people. I know you that believe that gay sin can't be so naive and so dumb to actually believe that somehow or another, if I say that the anti-gay doctrine is 700 years old, then that could mean something happened 700 years ago. And what happened? Well, there are some powerful people in this world, you know. Catholics are really, really, really dominant in so many things. And back in 700 years ago, there was a few very powerful, influential Catholic leaders that were really trying to figure out a way to, when somebody was in power that didn't quite agree with them, they wanted to figure out how they can create a scandal to get rid of them. So they put their heads together and they came up with several verses, about 11 of them, that they can use to try to manipulate the Word of God to say gay is sin. Now the words they used, like I always say 13 verses, because recently, about like 1850, two more verses came in, and so it made 13 verses. But, you know, the foundation for this comes from a Hebrew word called sodomite. And most of you listening to me today thinks another word for sodomite is homosexual. But that's not the Bible word. A lot of you tell me, well, homosexual means the citizens of Sodom. I mean, it's just almost like you're adamant in saying that. Why then, if you say you love the Bible, you don't believe the Bible? Because it's so simple. If you have software, you could do it that way. If you have a book that's a concordance, you can look up every instance of the word sodomite, and you can see the definition of it in the original Hebrew language. So people, when you try to say gay is sin, and you want to use the word sodomite, you can't just automatically use sodomy. Sodomy was only invented, what, 1,000 years ago or something? And then if you find the history of this word, you'll see that the Catholic Church actually wanted to try to figure out how to say any kind of sex out of the missionary position is sin. And so they invented this word, sodomy. Today, it's almost universally used. There's another word for the way gays do sex or something. And this is not how gays do sex in particular. Straights do sex in the way that you're thinking as well. So this word sodomy is like you can't even bother with it. If you use it, it means you've already made up your mind what you want to believe, and you don't care what the truth is. You know, you came to Jesus because you believed in truth. Can't you keep your idea that you believe in truth and you will seek truth? Don't seek lies. You know, you just can't sit there and go from one lie to another and then say that this is the Word of God and saying, let me make sure I got my things off, okay, saying that sodomy or sodomite means homosexual. So you go to the Hebrew word and you look up this word, sodomite, and you'll find that it's located in seven places in the Bible. In seven verses, five in the Old and two in the New. The New Testament uses a Greek word, arsenikotes, and it simply says a sodomite with a colon after it. So it doesn't matter anything what's described after the colon. It's still a sodomite. And the words that you get after the colon, you know, like bed chambering and seed or something, is really hard to find a good way of trying to make this a word for homosexual. But you can go to the Hebrew and find out what sodomite means really plainly. Besides the historical record and geological investigations, you can discover that this word sodomite means male temple prostitute. It's clear and simple. So you have here 7 verses in the Bible that were used to say gay is sin, and it uses the word for male temple prostitute. So if you go to history and go out to the fertility temples of Paul's day and of Moses' day and all in between, you can find these temples. And you can find on every square inch of some of these temples, inside and out, carved every kind of sexual acts you can imagine. Then you could dig out the record, because they kept records, you know, prostitution is a business. Even if it's for sacred prostitutes to fertility gods, it's still a business. You got to have accountants keeping track of all this money so you could buy supplies and feed the priest and make a lot of money and build your fancy temples and everything. You keep record of all this. So, you know, you just go out there and look at some of these scholars that dig into that. And sure enough, they find the records of these temple prostitutes. And, you know, how can you make a mistake and say that these words, sodomites, means homosexual? How could you make that kind of a mistake, people? That's really a drastic mistake. That's a scary mistake for you. You know, can you imagine 630 million people because you just use the word sodomite to condemn them? And so it's like Paul, you know, before he spoke Romans, you love to use Romans to try to say, you know, how do you get to the gays? You say verse 26 and 27, but how did you get there? 24 and 25, those verses are telling you that a change happened which made these people this way. So if you're saying they're gay, then in 24 and 25, God did something to them to make them gay, which means they were straight to begin with. Then you read a little earlier, and you can see how these people turned from God, because they used to know God, and they turned to all these crawly little things, you know. Well, you could do some more study and find out that these little creepy things, birds and lizards and all that kind of stuff, goes back to fertility gods and goddesses. They turned from God to gods and goddesses. So God gave them over to what? To what Paul did. Paul took a tour. You know, a tour? He's a tourist. He's in Corinthia, and he's a tourist now. Well, he still loves God and all that, but he's there. He made some tents, made a little extra money, went to a restaurant out there, and it's a famous temple. I can probably learn some stuff by going to this temple. I heard an awful lot. So I'm going to go in. It's a great big temple. I went to Paris last year, and Notre Dame is a big Catholic church over there. Great big. It's on an island in that river. And so you can go on that, go out there, and there's a line going. There's a line going in, and you could go into that. And you see some people sitting in the pews, and they look like they're kind of worshiping. But everybody else is walking up and down the aisles, taking pictures and movies and all that kind of stuff. And, oh, it's a pretty magnificent building. You know, I had my camera going too. I carried it. I don't believe in Catholicism. In fact, I think Catholicism is a pretty evil thing. And I don't care if there's a lot of Catholics out there. If you study your own religion, you'll find out the Vatican's not what they're telling you. That causes so much terrible stuff, you know. So I'm not going into that this program. But anyway, so Paul went in here, and you know something? There's a known fact about the very temple he went into, a very famous one. There were over 1,000 temple prostitutes in that temple that Paul toured. Can you imagine? Very soon after that, he went to Rome to write Romans. But he went to this, you know, he had a day set, go there, go into the temple, and he is walking down there, and they go the hallway out one direction. And they had all kinds of statues down this way. There's statues to the god. He can go, there's this god, and there's that god, and all these different gods, you know, he's looking at them, and then he sees an inscription, a plaque in front of one statue that says, this is the statue to the unknown god. Doesn't that make sense now? Remember in Romans, he's saying, you know, you even have a statue to the unknown God. Well, let me tell you who this unknown God is. It is God, Father Jesus Christ, and he went on to preach the gospel. Well, people, that's where it was, in Corinthia. Here Paul is fresh out of this temple, tearing it. Got all kinds of ideas about it. And Paul's been this way, you know. He knows about these pagan worship places that the Hebrew people always want to go to, you know, all these children of God, you know, Hebrew people. The God of Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, basically, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they got their temple of God there. And then what does the Hebrew men do? They go off to these fertility gods and join into these fertility rituals. And what happens there? They have sexual orgies. All kinds of people join together in a ritual sex act to the fertility gods. In that temple, there is known to be over 1,000 temple prostitutes. Most were male temple prostitutes, because male temple prostitutes was considered much more sacred. How come you can't take some time? You know, sometimes your pastors will even preach on this. But then tell me, how can you then go and say, well, now suddenly, we're going to, because it says man gave up the natural use, like, and all that, and burn, and lust one for another. What do you think this is? Do you think this is gay sex? Don't you know what gay sex is, people? Don't you know who gay people are? This would really, I mean, it is, you are really terrible kind of people when you try to say this is gay sex. Don't you know what gay sex is? It's so simple to know how to find and compare to the Bible what gays are and gay sex is. First of all, you could just look at your parents. You grew up with them, you know. You were born, and then way up to about 18 years old or so, some of you stay longer, you were with your parents. And they told you all kinds of stories, and you heard stories from various types of ways about how your parents met each other and dated, fell in love, and got married. Now, some of you are plenty old enough, you know. You're not married. But guess what? You got fiancés or something. Tell me about your fiancé. How did you get to know this person? Were you just minding your own business, and one day you ran across this person? And something, did somebody set you up? Did somebody, how do you do it? You were just working, and I mean, somehow or another, you were at some place and you saw somebody that you took a liking to. And you met that person. How do? You know, my name, your name. Hey, how about let's go into a restaurant? How many it is that you do? And there's all kinds of ways that you do it. Television is full of the ways straight people meet each other, and not one of them is considered sin and evil. Some of you might go and say, well, hey, you know, they seem to be pretty promiscuous, have sex in every city they go to or whatever, have a girlfriend everywhere. But basically, you know, television just does the romance thing with straight. Boy meets girl. They date, fall in love, and get married. Isn't that how it is? How come you knowing this don't understand who gay people are? Because that's what happens with gay people. They're just like you. They're minding their own business. Maybe they want to meet somebody, so they know places. They find out where places are, just like you. You try to get your friends to set you up with somebody. You say, well, maybe at my church I can meet somebody at Sunday school or somewhere, one of the gatherings they go to, I can meet somebody. Or, you know, I'm kind of interested in hiking. Maybe, you know, look, I'm up here hiking, for instance. Mount Rainier is still visible up here. And you join a little group like that. One of the, you know, it's not so much to hike for you, maybe. It's to maybe meet somebody. To date, fall in love, get married type of thing. Or maybe not get married. You know, a lot of you don't want to do that right away, but ultimately you do. And so you find the different places that you can meet people and get married. So, you know, I've taken all this time to explain to you what straight sex is, because you're supposed to know what it is. And you also know what prostitution is. You know, you can find a certain street in town where all the hookers are. You know all about that. You know that's quite a bit different than when you going out to the bar or going out to church or going out to wherever, grocery store, whatever, and meet somebody. And then date them, pick the restaurant stuff. You know, that's very different than picking up a hooker. If you go to a bar, you know, maybe you don't drink too much, maybe you drink a lot. That's your problem, you know, but maybe you just go there because you know you can maybe meet somebody. You dance, you know, dancing is fun, but the whole purpose is to meet somebody, date them, fall in love, and get married. That's the name of the game. And that's what you're all about, straight people. That's what you're doing. If you're not doing that, you kind of think something strange. You know, somebody's looking at you, you know, he's not dating very much. So what's going on here, you know? And you try to figure out why, you know, something's awful. He's a pretty weird person or something. You know, you just kind of want, he's going to be an old bachelor or something. She's going to be an old maid, never get married. So, what's this all mean? It means that you can now look at gay people and figure out who they are. Boy meets boy. They date. They fall in love. And they marry. It doesn't matter if you don't like the word marry. It doesn't matter at all. You don't even understand what marriage is. You think marriage is all Christian and everything, and you don't even have a clue where it came from. The 12th century, so many pagan fertility worshippers, pagan god worshippers, all the different gods, fertility gods and goddesses that the pagans worship. You know, they have marriage customs. They had a priest that stood in between the god or goddess and the couple getting married. That's what our pastors are. They're this priest that is standing in between the couple getting married and the god and goddesses. You like to say, no, this is a man of God being in marrying these two people before God. Well, why don't you understand history, and then you'll understand that these pagans got saved. And so many of them, this was a big influx of, you know, it became the law of the land that we'd be Christian. And so what did they do? They brought their customs of marriage to the Christian church and gave them Christian names. It didn't take too long after that before generally Christians thought that marriage was a Christian thing. It originated in Christian, the way that we get married today, you know, our receptions, all fertility related. People, don't get this idea that your concept of marriage is God's concept of marriage. Nothing wrong with it. I mean, the Christian names for them are fine. The idea of the pastor being the intermediary between you, marrying you under God, you know, that's great. No stress. It's great. It's a nice way to celebrate you getting married. Nothing particularly wrong with it. But if you know the history, then you can say that this is not particularly anything to do with God, except that this is your custom. This is your tradition. It's not God. The first 1,000 years of Christianity, you know what they thought about marriage? First of all, it's a business deal a lot. And way back into before Jesus came, it's a business. Two families made a deal between each other how they can get the riches, make the best deal on the way that they set up the marriage. It doesn't matter about love. You just simply did what the family said. And it's a business deal. That's what marriage was. Rarely was this thing called love even involved until after you're with somebody, you know, and maybe you've been together, you know, this is a long enough deal, so you knew you had a chance to fall in love and all that, or you fell in love afterwards. But it's not like us today, boy meets girl, falls in love. No, this is not what happened very often back then. And so you've got to understand this, that the first 1,000 years, Christianity had a concept of sex and marriage. If you were going to have sex with your wife, you were doing it because you want to produce a baby. Not because it felt good, because you were giving your love to your wife. It wasn't because of these reasons. Now, in some cases, maybe it was. But generally speaking, the concept, the general practices, the ideas was, you know, God says you reproduce. So they were going to an extreme and saying the only way that you have sex with your wife is to reproduce. For they had a way, you know, men especially had a way around this, because it was legal up to about the 11th century to have concubines and mistresses. It was legal for this. A man that's a Christian can go ahead and have sex with his wife to have a baby. in between that time that he was trying to have a baby, he would go to his concubine. You know, you hire a concubine, and they're more often. You might have a mistress. This was legal until about the 11th century. It's interesting when you really study history. Then you could take all the patriarchs. They have all kinds of wives and concubines, hundreds and hundreds of them. Then you go back even further in a couple of types of situation. It was perfectly okay to brother and sister to, as it were, get married. There was nobody to marry them, but, you know, how else are you going to populate the world unless brothers and sisters got married? Because there was no other people to get married to, you know. God created Adam and Eve. By the way, the rib for that, the Hebrew word for that means cell from that rib. That means God already told you in the Bible that he built all the DNA, all the structures, all the molecules, all the blueprint for every kind of human being that ever came after that, all the colors of eyes and hairs and skin textures and even attitudes and all that, and gays was already in this blueprint that God did in the cell that he took from the rib. There is another word that would be more anatomically correct that's used in Exodus for if you were just going to talk about a rib taken out of him. But anyway, if you learn that gay people are people that boy meets boy, dates, falls in love, get married, then you can look in the Bible when you read, burn the last one for another. Who? How many people are involved? Paul went to a fertility temple. All kinds of orgies going on there. You look at this Sodom and Gomorrah. How many men? All boys. All the men. All the grandpas. And there's also another part of that sentence that is right in the same sentence. And all the people. So people, that would be a huge orgy if the angels were willing. If they were just doing it for fun. Otherwise, it's gang rape. But it's worse than that. God, Lot said, don't do wickedly. And this word wickedly means to utterly break into pieces. They weren't intending to do nice things to these angels. The angels would not be able to survive. And of course, we know the survivors of Sodom and Gomorrah were Lot and his two daughters. Everybody else died. And right away, they had sex with their father to make babies. The only survivors did incest. Can you imagine? And you're so interested in trying to condemn gays because of the gang rape that was being attempted there. People, time is changing. And soon, something that you don't expect is going to happen because you don't expect it because you're not watching. You think that the rapture is going to be magic. You think you don't have to go through anything. There's going to be 1,260 days of spanking. This is the period of time that you will get your scrubbed in the blood of Christ. When you die and in death's gate, you are getting scrubbed in the blood of Christ. But when you're alive and raptured, you need 1,260 days to get scrubbed in the blood of Christ, to get washed in his blood. That's not going to be fun. I'm out of time here. If you don't know Jesus, turn to him and say, Jesus, I believe you're the Son of God and that God rose you on the third day. Forgive me of my sins and come into my life. A simple prayer gets you saved. But huge things are about to happen. Great deception. As much as in the whole sky, you'll see something that looks like Jesus returning and telling you to worship. You'll hear him inside your head. You better believe that's not Jesus coming. So get ready for the deceptions. See you next week.